Hare Krishna. There's a good saying that's called to live alive, and that means that when one has some false pretense and lives out a false pretense, like insane asylum, there are half dozen people who think that they're Napoleon and walk around with their hands inside their shirts or their restraining jackets. So that's called living alive, because Napoleon's been dead a long time and there was only one of him, not six. Yesterday at our Govinda Center, where we have our Bhakti Club program, Ishwara Krishna Prabhu and myself gave a presentation, similar presentations, or at least my theme continued on from his. He talked about the knowledge filter which exists in the world today, and it's there in a very obvious way in the media, obviously very much there in terms of politics, and he concentrated on what Srila Prabhupada wanted us to concentrate on, which was the knowledge filter in the so-called science. And he used a few examples, one of which was the concept of evolution as it's being taught, and the example he gave was how a larvae transforms into a butterfly, and went through the different stages and explained that at one point the larva completely dissolves all of the organs, everything dissolved into some kind of mush, and then it becomes a butterfly with wings, a completely different living entity. And all scientists agree that they don't know how this happens. And yet, they have a theory that butterflies evolved, and that theory from larvae, and that theory, they go on to both back up the theory of evolution, and they continue on like that, presenting this as if it were fact. But the truth is, they don't know how it happens, and the possibility of it just happening by evolution or chance, especially what to speak of the first prototype larva that decided he wanted to become a butterfly, was akin to, and there's a nice picture that he had, which was of a metro train, subway train, going into the metro tunnel on one side and coming out on the other side as an airplane. And no one in their right mind would say that this is possible without some kind of extraordinary engineering, restructuring, design work, and so on. But they just say, well, it just happened by chance. So, but it's not true. Things don't happen by chance. Subway trains don't turn into airplanes by chance. They don't turn into airplanes by random selection. So it's a lie. And he gave another example, which was the knowledge filter, how Homo sapiens are meant to have reappeared on Earth 200,000 years ago at the latest, and they became civilized 15, 20 years ago, although it's hard to find any civilized Homo sapiens nowadays. I don't know, maybe they should wait another 3,000 years before they become civilized. But he gave this example of a footprint in Africa, which was in rock 3.1 million years old, of a human's foot. And most anthropologists or archaeologists just write that off as actually just being the footprint of an ape. But it's not a footprint of an ape, because apes don't have feet like humans. Their feet are like hands. But it's just filtered out. Why? Well, it doesn't fit in to the currently accepted standard, and so it doesn't exist. So what's that got to do with living a lie? Well, science is, amongst other disciplines, but especially science, is extremely important in terms of shaping our society, shaping our culture, shaping the purpose of our lives. It's the basis on how and why we educate people, and the education is also based on a certain type of outlook on life. But the whole thing, and of course the whole thing, is based on a mechanistic outlook, which brings about a certain type of hedonistic culture that we see in today's world. It's a systematic way of doing away with another, much more rational explanation for how trains can turn into airplanes, and that is that the parts of one are used by engineers and designers to become an airplane. And of course, this concept of creation by the design of a supreme designer is what our world today doesn't really like. So this concept of living a lie, living in the world today, looking for a job outside, is perpetuating the type of myth that life is about what everyone is being taught that it's about, that reality or the world that we see is what they postulated to be. And that ultimately the purpose of life, which is becoming a consumer, contributing in your own way to the world, is something of value, and then you die. But it's not, it's a lie. And when you participate in that, that's why I made that reference, that's living a lie. When you live and work in the society that we are in, we're not only living the lie, but we're also perpetuating it. What to speak of sending our children to study it, we're also subjecting other innocent souls to become brainwashed to accept a, unfortunately, demoniac view of the world. And therefore, it's unavoidable that they grow up with all kinds of bad habits, tendencies, practices, and lack of beliefs. My presentation continued on from Ishwara's was also somewhat to do with the knowledge filter, but I approached it from a different way. And that was to emphasize to people that they shouldn't take so seriously even the right knowledge that we get from science, or even the right knowledge that we get from our senses, as being a comprehensive definition of what reality is about. It's not. And so I give a little example which is now sort of hard to communicate over over the internet, but a piece of paper, and took a Bhagavad Gita. So if you hold a Bhagavad Gita, its spine up against a piece of paper, and then on the other side, it simply looks like a rectangle. So if one imagines that there are living entities living in that two-dimensional paper, and for them that's their world. They live in two dimensions. We live in three dimensions. They live in the two-dimensional world, and when they come across the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is a rectangle. Look, we unearthed this rectangle after digging over here. We found this rectangle, and we wonder what type of civilization left this huge big block over here. But they don't see that it's a Bhagavad Gita. And no matter what they do, they can't see the Bhagavad Gita. All they can see is a rectangle. But if for some reason, for instance, we were to open up, shift the Bhagavad Gita in such a way that we open up one page and you press one page against the, say, page just of Sanskrit, and you press it up against the paper, then all of a sudden they see, we'll look through some kind of mysterious message. The one page, there must be some others somewhere else. Well, there is somewhere else. All you have to do is turn the page. But they don't know how to turn pages. They're just living in one page. For them, that's reality. And therefore, they may see Dehino Spinjata Dehi, but they don't see anything else besides that. Why? Because they're conditioned. They're conditioned in two dimensions. We're conditioned in three dimensions. Is three dimensions the definition of reality? Well, not by Bhagavatam, but not even by requirements of quantum mechanics. You can't define quantum mechanics by three dimensions only. There has to be more. So then, what are those more dimensions? And it's not that time is the fourth dimension. And we form so many other spatial dimensions, which means that things that we're seeing, just like the spine of the Bhagavad Gita is a brick, well, it's a book. Can't you see? Read the book. But they can't see or read the book. They don't have any access to it. Similarly, the things that we're seeing are only the three-dimensional versions of what things may be. Some things may be three-dimensional only. Some things may be multidimensional, much more dimensional. And therefore, once again, we have a knowledge filter. Our senses filter knowledge in that we only know some things. And that becomes then the curse of conditioned souls, is that it becomes impossible for us to actually really understand even matter, what to speak of, understand spirit or what's beyond matter. So but there's one thing that the living entities in the paper and us have in common, and that's consciousness. And if you can change the two-dimensional person's consciousness so that he sees in three dimensions, then he can actually read the Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, if our consciousness can be changed and upgraded so that we can actually really see in higher dimensions, then we can see, not only we can see that which our world is, but we can even see those things that are beyond our world. And Krishna consciousness is the issue of purifying consciousness, of changing one's consciousness, of elevating consciousness. And that elevation of consciousness happens, of course, by chanting Hare Krishna. And people can argue as much as they like, but they need to chant Hare Krishna to either prove it or disprove it. So that if people do chant Hare Krishna, then they will be able to actually change their consciousness and get free from this knowledge filter, and ultimately see things as Krishna uses the word tattvataha, yom amveti tattvataha, that you can know Krishna, and you can know, if you know Krishna, then you know everything else. You can know everything in truth and not as a lie. So yes, better not to live a lie, and better not, even worse than that, to perpetuate a lie. Hare Krishna.